Yeah, this should be good.
It's going. That's going the top is going. It's counting.
This three. There are three main topics in this week's parasha. The visit that Avraham Avinu had of the Malachim who appeared to him as if they were humans. The tefillos that Avraham Avinu was trying to daven in order to intervene, that the people of Sodom and of the other cities should be saved, the saving of Lot and the destruction of Sodom. In other words, the whole story with all its details of Sodom, and then the parsha of the Akedah, the parsha of the Nisayon that Avraham Avinu had, where he seemingly was told by the Ribbono Shel Olam to kill his son. And one of the things that strikes the person who's learning the parsha is that if all these events are put together in one parsha and read on one Shabbos, is there any connection whatsoever between the three events that are recorded here in the Torah, between the event of the Malachim coming and the Hachnasas Arachim of Avraham Avinu in reference to these Malachim, the event of the Haficha, the destruction, and the surrounding details that took place in reference to Sodom, and the Nisayon of the Akedah? Is there something which is a common theme between the three of them, or somehow connects up the three of them together? In addition, there's something very strange which manifests itself particularly in this week's parsha, even though you find parallels to a lesser degree in other parshas in the Torah as well. And that is that the parsha starts off with this story which is basically an example of the degree to which Avraham Avinu went in order to do a Maisa Chesed. And the Torah goes into extreme detail in telling us what happened here. It goes out of its way to go into particulars which seemingly are very strange. The pasuk says, "Vayisa Einov Vayar," that Avraham Avinu saw. "Vine Shleisha Anoshim Nitzavim Alav." He saw three people coming towards the direction where he was located. And Chazal say that these people look like Arab Falachim. Right, they were Arab peasants. They were the low-class Arabs. That's how Chazal described the appearance of these three Malachim. And nevertheless, what's the reaction of Avraham Avinu? The reaction of Avraham Avinu is, when he sees them, Vayoratz likroso mipesach ha'ayel v'yishtachu alto. He runs towards them and he gives them a tremendous amount of kovod, vayishtachu alto, and tells them, do me a favor, come stay by me. And if you look in the psukim there, there's a tremendous emphasis in the psukim on the speed, the zrizus, the speed and the energy that Avraham Avinu expended in order to be going with chesed to these Arabs. If you look in the psukim, the pasuk say that Vayamaya Avraham Ayo Sarah, he ran, He hurried into the tent where Sarah was, and what did he say to her? He said to her, Mary, hurry up and go and prepare food for these guys. Ve'alabaka, and then he himself rots, he runs to get the animals. Vayimaher lasaisa, and he runs in order to prepare them. Three times the pasuk uses an expression either of hurrying, vayimaher, or of ritza, or of running. And this is all immediately after his bris milah, when he's considered in terms of chazal to have the din of a chayla. Right? He's sick. He's a sick person. He's after an operation, which at that age is a pretty major operation. And what does he do? He kills three animals. That's what Chazal say. He takes three cows and he kills three cows because he wants to give each one of these Arab peasants tongue from each one of the animals. Why? Say Chazal, because tongues are the best part of the animal. And then what does he say to them? He says to them, do me a favor. Don't leave. But he's got a problem because he's in the middle of having a conversation with somebody. Who's he having the conversation with? With God. So he turns around and he says to the Ribbono Shel Olam, do me a favor, hang on a second, because I've got to deal with these guys. And Chazal learn out from here the Gedolei Hachnasas Orchim miKabbalas Pnei Hashchina. And it's not Stam Kabbalas Pnei Hashchina, it's Kabbalas Pnei Hashchina of Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu is having a conversation with the Ribbono Shel Olam. He's in the midst of a nevuah, he's in the midst of a gilui of the Ribbono Shel Olam. And he says to the Ribbono Shel Olam, I've got something more important to do at this point in time. I've got to run and deal with these Arabs. I've got to give them to eat. And we then find at a later point where Avraham Avinu starts arguing with the Ribbono Shel Olam. He starts this whole conversation with the Ribbono Shel Olam. Put the cigarette out. He runs this whole conversation with, and take a haircut. He runs this whole conversation with the Ribbono Shel Olam. And what's the conversation with the Ribbono Shel Olam? He's arguing, he's debating with the Ribbono Shel Olam, and he says to the Ribbono Shel Olam, don't destroy Sodom. Sodom was the antithesis of what Avraham Avinu was all about. Avraham Avinu was all about chesed, right? That's what we've just been told. That's the whole description that's going on here in the Torah. The ultimacy in hakpoda of being a goyimul chesed. And then you've got these guys who are living in this community in Sodom, right? Which was a state. It was a collection of five cities, who are the antithesis of what Avraham Avinu was all about. If there's anything which is the exact opposite to Chesed, as Chazal described, this is Sodom. And therefore, La'ilam, he should have been very happy that these guys are getting zapped out and wiped off the face of the earth, right? Because if you've got something which is the antithesis of what you believe in. And take it from me, this is 100% psychologically true. If you have individuals who are the antithesis of what you believe in, then you're dying that they should get zapped out. That's what you want, that they should get zapped out. So how come that Avraham Avinu is standing there and he's arguing with the Ribbono Shel Olam, he's having this whole debate with the Ribbono Shel Olam, right? And he's having rachmanis on them and he's saying to the Ribbono Shel Olam, be gomel chesed, do chasodim with them. Why? And all you have to do is to open up any book, sefer, that you can read. And there's some svarim even about this that you guys can read. The little Medrash says. You can read it, and in it, it's got a very vivid description of the achzorius of what Sodom did. All that are examples of the antithesis of chesed. And Avraham Avinu is fighting, no, save them, save them, save them, Rachmanis on them. He sounds like a Mashgiach in the area. I mean, what's going on here? Why is the man who is the ultimate in chesed worrying about these people? Elamai, that in itself is part of the chesed of Avraham Avinu. It's part of the chesed of Avraham Avinu that he can't bear to think that there's a guy who's going to be zapped out. However, here we hit upon a question which jumps out. It springs out at us, and that is, that this story took place when Avraham Avinu was about 100 years old. Now, if you look in Chazal, again, take your little Medrash says, and or if you can actually read, and you can even try an English Mayam Loyes, and look at what it says about the life of Avraham Avinu prior to his 100th birthday, before he hit the age of 100. And Chazal are full of stories about the chasadim of Avraham Avinu. And if Chazal, in fact, did go into the details of the difference between the Maisa Chasodim that Avraham Avinu did and how much more he was involved in Chesed than other people who were also known to be big Bali Chesed like Eev and others. But Avraham Avinu is unique. And Chazal go on and on and on pages about it with vivid descriptions about it. The only Maisa Chesed of Avraham Avinu that's mentioned in the Torah explicitly is this story with a bunch of Arabs. All the other Maisa Chasodim of Avraham Avinu, everything that he did until the age of 100, is not mentioned explicitly in the Torah. Rashi, quoting Chazal on this week's Parsha, says that by Yito Eshel, that's a remez. Eshel is a Rashi Tevis, Achilo, Sheino, right? Acheshtio, Lino, right? It's Rashi Tevis that there, all these stories that we find in Chazal, the Merumas, they're hinted at in this Pasuk. But Mefresh doesn't say anything. Why is it that the Torah waited until Avraham Avinu was 100 years old in order to tell us a story which is really not that significant? There were a bunch of Arab workers and he gave them to eat, as far as he was concerned. Forget about when they revealed themselves and they told him he was Malachim. That they were Malachim. But up to that point in time, Pseida, he does. He gave a meal to an Ebuch, you know. A lot of us do that. He gives meals to people and others. So, there's a very interesting insight from the Sfas Emes on this point. The Sfas Emes, in his way, and the way he had it, the way in which he wrote very, very, in very brief, short language. But we'll elaborate a bit on what the Sfas Emes says, but basically this is what the Sfas Emes is saying. The Sfas Emes says that he has a problem in last week's Parsha, and if he can solve his problem in last week's Parsha, he'll be able to solve this problem in this week's Parsha. What was his problem in last week's Parsha? He says, if you look in last week's Parsha, Avraham Avinu is again arguing with the Ribbono Shel Olam. What's he arguing with the Ribbono Shel Olam about this time? You promised me children, and I have no children. Ve'ani, says Avraham Avinu, matiten livi anoichi hoilech ariri. I've got no children. And the Mefarshim immediately ask on that pasuk, everybody asks on that pasuk, what's Avraham Avinu talking about? The Ribbono Shel Olam promised him children. So this great believer who came to the realization that there is a God in the world at the age of 3 or at the age of 50, depending which mandoma you take on, as far as this mashma from the Mefarshei Rambam in Hilchos Deos, it's actually not a machlekes, it's just levels of emunah. But at the end of the day, this man who reached this, who again is the epitome in the examples that exist in Jewish history of the prototype or the generic of the individual who's a maimin, he doesn't believe the Ribbono Shel Olam's promise that the Ribbono Shel Olam said to him that you will have children. Why is he coming after the promise, after the avtocha that he has from the Ribbono Shel Olam? Why is he coming and complaining to the Ribbono Shel Olam, I haven't got children, you'll have children? And then the continuation is even more strange. The continuation is that the Ribbono Shel Olam says to him, don't worry, you will have children, v'hem in b'shem. Now he believes. Says the Sfas Emes, what's going on here? The Ribbono Shel Olam promised him children. First time around, he didn't believe. So he starts arguing with the Ribbono Shel Olam, v'neicha helech ariri. And then the Ribbono Shel Olam says, you will have children, v'emim Hashem, and now he believes. He says, well, what happened here? So the Sfas Emes has a very interesting insight here. He says, obviously, if the Ribbono Shel Olam promised Avraham Avinu children, then Avraham Avinu accepted the fact that he was going to have children, and he believed he was going to have children. But Avraham Avinu had a different problem. What was his problem? He said to the Ribbono Shel Olam the following. Why do I want children? Why is it human nature that people want to have children? Because everybody wants a hemshach. Everybody wants continuity. Everybody wants that when they pass on to a better world, there should be some sort of continuity. Particularly Avraham Avinu, who spent his entire life doing something which he held correctly was the shlichus that he got from the Ribbono Shel Olam and what he had to do in this world. So if I spent 100 years of my life with Mesiras Nefesh, getting thrown into furnaces and who knows what, in order to do something for the Ribbono Shel Olam, even if I have a child at the age of 100 years, it's not going to help anymore because it's not going to be continuity. Why? Because he missed that 100 years. If he would have grown up together with me in the 100 years that I was doing all this, then either directly or indirectly, either by direct education or by osmosis, however it was going to work, he would have incorporated within him these values and he would have continued it. But if he's not around, if he's only born when I'm 100, so he missed the whole thing. If he missed the whole thing, v'anoichi hoylech hariri, I'm sterile, barren. There's no hemshech of all my avodas Hashem. I saw in a chassidish sefer, I don't know, saying it's pshat, but I saw in a chassidish sefer, he says, I can't remember who it was, I saw this years ago. He says, v'anoichi hoylech hariri, v'anoichi Hashem olekecha. The whole message that I was trying to give across, that's sterile, that's not going to have any continuity. So the Ribbono Shel Olam turns around to him and he says to him, you know what? Don't worry, you're going to have a kid at the age of 100. But whatever you want to do in this world, this kid will be able to carry it on, I guarantee you that. Makes no sense? I'm telling you that's what it's going to be. The Hemim Bashim, that he believed. Says the Sfasemis, that he believed. Says the Sfasemis, what's this business about 100 years old? Why does everything start at 100 years old? And whatever he did beforehand, even though it's considered to be great acts of chesed, don't play such a role. Says the Sfasemis, because the Torah only talks, he says, it's mukhrech mavoi, you see it from the Psukim, the Torah only talks about the Maisa chesed that Avraham Avinu did after he had a bris milah. Everything that Avraham Avinu did before Bris Milah, that's not mentioned before in the Torah, that's only Beremez. Says the Sfasemis, what do you see from here? You see that there's a vast difference between the Avraham Avinu pre Bris Milah and the Avraham Avinu post Bris Milah. And whatever Avraham Avinu did, which had a tremendous positive effect on humanity as a whole, as Chazal described, is still nothing compared to what Avraham Avinu will do after he has a Bris Milah, because the Bris Milah is made a change. What's the change that the Bris Milah made? The Baal Mesilas Yesharim, the Ramchal, the guy who wrote Mesilas Yesharim, wrote like a number of others for him as well. He wrote two other famous forums. One of the forums is called Das Tfunois, and the other sefer is called Derech Hashem. And in both of these forums, where he talks in perhaps in more in less Musadika terms and more in Kabbalistic terms, he hammers away at a certain point. And the point that he hammers away is, why did God create the world? What was the point of God creating a world and God putting human beings in this world? What's the point of the exercise? So he has a hypothesis. I'm not going to go into the whole hypothesis because there are two complete sfarim, as I said, which are talking about this hypothesis. But his hypothesis is the following. And it's a very basic philosophical understanding. He says God, by definition, is the ultimate in everything. Because if he wouldn't be the ultimate, if it's a he or a she, I'm not sure, but if he wouldn't be the ultimate, then he wouldn't be God. God, by definition, must be the maximum, must be the ultimate. Therefore, God must be the ultimate in whatever is considered goodness. And an integral part of goodness, of toiv, says Ramchal, is to be meitiv, is to do good to other people or to other things. That's an integral part of goodness. Goodness is not something which is an abstract philosophical idea which you pontificate about as you're playing poker. That's not what goodness is all about. Goodness is a practical thing. It's something which a person has to do. And how do you do it? You do it by doing it to other people, or to other things, to other objects, other animals, whatever it may be. Says Ramchal, Derech HaToiv. The whole concept of toiv is lahativ, is to be mative, is to do to others good. Therefore, God created a world, and God created human beings for one reason and one reason only. In order to be mative, in order to be able to have the object of goodness, in order to be mative. Reb Dessler makes a very interesting point. Reb Dessler Michtam Melio says the following. You find a lot of people who by nature are Balei Chesed. By nature they do Chasodim. He says you find a lot of Goyim who do Chesed. There are good Tzadikim Mesoedim. There are good people in the world who do Chesed. Why are they doing Chesed? Says Rav Dessler, most people, why do they do chesed? They do chesed for egoistic reasons. They give tzedakah for egoistic reasons. He says, very often you see in front of you a situation which is tragic. You're told a story, somebody's raising money for something. He tells you a story. And you get emotionally involved in the story because it's a tragedy, it's a tragic story. Parents got killed, Rahman al-Islam, in a car crash. There were 12 orphans left over between the age of 1 and 5. And there's no way, there's absolutely no way in which they can survive unless you give your $100. So you immediately put your hand in your pocket and you take out $100 and you say, take it before you carry on telling me the story and I'm going to give you more. Why are you giving? For egoistic reasons. You can't take, it disturbs you emotionally, the picture of the other person suffering. So you want to satisfy your conscience. You want to get that picture out of your head. I don't want to see these 12 orphans all under the age of 5. I don't want to see them. So what do? I give $100. If I give $100, I can blanket out the picture. There's a famous story of one of the great Chassidish Rebbes, the Talmidim of the third generation from the Baal Shem Tov, Rebunim of Pshischa. The guy came into him and told him over a sob story. And he pulled out of his pocket a large sum of money and he gave him the sum of money. He said, take this, solve the problem. And the guy said, Rebbe, thank you very much. And he started walking out and he said to him, come back. And the guy came back and he took out of his pocket 5 cents and he said, take this as well. So the guy looked at him as if he was crazy. And he said to him, Rebbe, what's all this about? So he said, I want to tell you something. He said, there's a pasuk in the Torah. There's a pasuk in the Torah in reference to chesed, in reference to tzedakah. What does the pasuk say in the Torah? The pasuk says the following. Nasan titen loy, you shall surely give him, and don't feel bad when you give him. Why does it say this double expression? Yeah, we translate it, the art scroll translated, thou shalt surely give. Right? What does that mean? Nasan titanism. Says Rabbi Pshischa, when you give stock, you give twice. He says, the first time you're giving in order to solve your conscience. He says, that's for the first time I gave you. He says, and then the person says, and then your heart will be happy. Then you'll have no conscience. He says, the second time was giving. That's called giving. That wasn't done to do with conscience. I solved my conscience. So I was like a giving. Says Rav Dessler, the Yoseid HaDover is that most people give tzedakah, most people do chesed, because it makes them feel good. It's egoistic. He says, but there are other people who also give tzedakah, who it's not because it's egoistic in that sense, it's for a different reason altogether. It's because they're believers in the fact that society has to function in a proper manner, that society has to be able to survive, and in order for society to survive, there have to be certain basics. And which these basics are basics of human behavior, because otherwise you're going to end up in a situation of anarchy, and if you're going to end up in a situation of anarchy, then society will dissolve. Therefore, there are people who believe in certain socialistic ideas. The community has to help the people who can't make it on their own, because this is the responsibility of the community, because otherwise the community is going to collapse, right? Basic political economic philosophy of the Democratic Party, right? Otherwise known as communists. It's the responsibility, it's the onus of the public to help those who can't help themselves. That's already a philosophical ideology. Helping somebody else, says Rabbeinu Nissim Goyen, that a goy, a non-Jew, is mechuyev in any mitzvah, even though the mitzvah wasn't given the furish to the sheva, to the umis ha'olam. It's not one of the sheva mitzvahs b'nei noach. If it's something which makes sense. Therefore, says Rabbeinu Nissim Goyen, because these ideas are true ideas, that you need a society to survive, therefore a goy is mechuyev in tzedakah, because it makes sense, it's a logical thing. However, those are the very, very superficial levels of understanding what chesed is all about. And those taka are the chasodim of the non-Jew. That's the understanding of a non-Jew. A Jew. And Jews became Jews not by Maimed HaSinai. Jews became Jews by Maimed HaSinai in terms of obligations to do mitzvahs. But in terms of the singularity and the uniqueness and the difference between a Jew and a non-Jew, that didn't take place at Maimed HaSinai. That took place when Avraham Avinu said, I want you to know something. There is going to be a unique group within the human race that has a unique function. And that's you and your children, not all of your children, but one line of descent of your children through Yitzchak. And the identifying factor is going to be the bris on the eighth day, as opposed to the bris on other days. We won't get into that. That's a partial announcement. That's the unique identifying factor of the Jew. And from that point and onwards, the Jew became different from the non-Jew. The Jew is not the same as the non-Jew with an extra couple of obligations. The Jew is a whole different metzias than a non-Jew. And it came about through the Bismillah. Rabbi Kupitz told me a story this week where he says he knows personally the individual involved. And he told me the following story. He says there was a guy who was living in New York, who was a student in college in New York, who came from a family which was totally assimilated. They had no idea that he was Jewish. He didn't know he was Jewish. He was a college student, and he needed to make some money. And it was vacation time. And he saw an ad that they're looking for somebody to work in a vegetable store. So he went to work in the vegetable store. He noticed that every night, because of the regulations of the Ministry of Health, because of the health regulations, anything that was left in the store, they weren't allowed to sell the next day, so they used to garbage it. So a lot of it was taka stuff which wasn't sellable anymore by the end of the day, but a lot of it was very good fruits and vegetables. And they were garbaging it the whole time. So he went to the owner of the store and he said to the owner of the store, this is stupid, why are we garbaging this? So the owner of the store said to him, what do you want me to do? He said, let me take it, I'll take it, I got where to take it to. So the owner of the store said, I got no problem, but you've got to promise me that you get everything out of the store, because I don't want any trouble when the inspectors come round. So he said, I guarantee you that I will take everything away. So every night he used to load up his car, and he used to put this stuff in the car, and he went down to a certain area, in the Bowery area, and where there were a lot of homeless who were sleeping under a bridge. And he used to give out these fruits and vegetables. And after he did this for a few weeks, he noticed that there was one African-American lady who never took from the food. She never ever took from the food. So after a few weeks, he said to her, why don't you ever take any of the fruits and the vegetables that I bring? So she looked at him and she said, only Jews do things like that, and I hate Jews. Which started him off a whole process, and he ended up, he lives here in Yerushalayim, Rabbi Kupis knows him personally. There is a basic difference, and even a goy understands that, even an Afro-American goy, between a Jew and a non-Jew. And this starts with the Bris Milah. The Maaseh Chesed that Avraham Avinu did prior to the Bris Milah was a tremendous Maaseh Chesed, as far as I'm of the opinion. Tremendous Maaseh Chesed. But it's not the same type of Maaseh Chesed that was done after Bris Milah. Because after Bris Milah, the Jew got a whole new concept of a Maaseh Chesed, which has absolutely nothing to do with the way in which other people do Chasodim. And the new Maaseh Chesed that the Jew got after Bris Milah is that it has nothing to do with the recipient. It's like the Ribbono Shel Olam does Maaseh Chasodim to us. Does he need it? He doesn't need it. It's just that Derech HaTov LaHeitiv. That is the nature of Toiv, is to do good. Therefore the Jew has to do chasodim, nothing at all to do whether the other guy is deserving of it or not deserving of it, whether it makes him feel better or it doesn't make him feel better, whether it's for social reasons or socialistic reasons or not for socialistic reasons. Chesed has to do with the person himself. He has a chiyuv to do chesed. Says the Ribbono Shel Olam to Avraham Avinu, I'm not interested in your maaseh chasodim that took place before the Bris Milah, as far as going down to the other generation is concerned, because that the Goyim have as well, that humanity, that is the Ministry of Goyim says a person is mechuyev because it's seicheldik that you're mechuyev to worry about somebody else. I'm talking about the fact that Maaseh Chesed is something which is responsible, which is for you, not for the other person. It's to make you into a native. And the Rambam says this mefurash. The Rambam says Mefurish in Hilchas Deis that there is a halacha of halachta bidrocha, that a person has to imitate and go in the ways of God. Says the Rambam, how can a person go in the ways of God? You know what God is? So how can you go in the ways of God? Says the Rambam, it doesn't mean that. It means work out what the midas of the Ribbono Shel Olam are and do that. In the same way as he is a racham be a rachamon. In the same way as he is a chanan be a chanan. The same way as the Ribbono Shel Olam does chesed, you do chesed as well. And then the Rambam finishes up. And he says, "Chayev on adam lahanig atzmei bohem." A person has to act in this way because by doing this, he's being medame himself to the Ribbono Shel Olam kafi koychoi. V'zehu nikra. This is called, says the Rambam, derech Hashem. This means valachta bidroch. This means going in the derech Hashem. V'hi shelimed Avraham Avinu lebonov. And that's what Avraham Avinu taught his children. When did he teach his children that? After the Bris Milah. Therefore, there could be a bunch of Arab peasants. It doesn't make any difference who they are, because it's nothing to do with them, it's to do with you, says Avraham Avinu. You have to do the Maaseh Chesed. And therefore, says the Tzadok HaKohen, says, therefore the Ribbono Shel Olam dreaded that the whole story should take place, giving food to people who didn't need it. They were melachim. Why? Because the point of the exercise is not that they should benefit out of it. The point of the exercise is not that they should have something out. The point of the exercise is what you have to do. We find at the end of the parasha, when it comes to the story of the Akedah, that the Malach says to Avraham Avinu, as Avraham Avinu is about to kill Yitzchak, Vayayim, the Malach says, Al tishlach yodcha el hanar. Don't touch him. Val tas leimuma, don't do anything. Because you're going to get the schar as if you killed him. Why? Because v'leichasachta es bincha es yechidcha mimeni. Because you didn't keep back from doing exactly what I wanted you to do. But if you translate the words literally, v'leichasachta es bincha es yechidcha mimeni, it says because you didn't hold back your only son mimeni from me. Who's talking here? The Malach. So why is the Malach saying from me? The Malach should be saying from the Ribbono Shel Olam. So the Malbim writes, not in his Pirush and Chumash. In his Pirush and Chumash he writes differently. But in the Sefer that he has, in Drush, his Drush Sefer, the Malbim writes and says the following. That every Maisa that a person does creates a Malach. If you do the Maisa Bishlemus, if you do the Maisa properly, you create a Malach who is complete. If you do the Maisa without Shlemus, you create a Malach who limps. Which is why I maintain that most times when guys get Aliyahs here, or when they daven by the Omid, the first thing we should do after davening is make a collection for something which for years I've wanted to establish, a home for disabled angels. Because every time you pronounce a word wrongly, and every time you say a bracha wrongly, you create this poor angel with one leg who then spends eternity hopping around. Let's at least find a nice makeshift skating for him. Nice nursing home, where he can be looked after properly. An action, a dibur, creates a malach. Says the Malbim, that's what the Malach said to him. The Malach said to him, you want to kill him because you think you have to kill him. You didn't do anything wrong. You did exactly what the Baruch Shalom wanted you to do. How do you know that? Me many, look at me. Am I Shalom? Yes, so you know, you did the right thing. How the Malbim touches up the pasuk. So it's your ever, the Malbim who touches off the pasuk like that. What's the pshat? The pshat is because the Ribbono Shel Olam, and this Rav Tzadok HaKohen says this, the Ribbono Shel Olam said to Avraham Avinu something which is double meaning. He never told him kill Yitzchak. What did he say to him? V'ha'alehu, take him up on the altar. Now v'ha'alehu can mean take him up on the altar and then do what you meant to do, kill him. Or v'aleihu can mean just take him up on the altar, which sounds stupid, l'chura. But it could mean that. When did the Malach say to Avraham Avinu, you did the right thing, meaning that when the Ribbono Shel Olam said v'aleihu, he didn't mean kill him, he meant just taking him up. The minute that the Malach saw that Avraham Avinu wanted to do it, the minute that the Malach saw that Avraham Avinu wanted to do it, the Malach said, that's it. You've done it. Because you yourself have revealed that you did it. Because the pshat now is v'aleihu is enough. Why? So there's an unbelievable chidah. And the chidah says the following. The Chazal say, Ein dover ha'oimei lifnei ha'rotzen. There is nothing which stands in the way of a person's rotzen. Says the Chidah, what's the pshat? What are Chazal saying? He says, Chazal is saying the following. Chazal is saying that when it comes to actions, we are human beings and there are all sorts of things which act as ikuvim and act as manias and act on the part of the Yetzer Hara to stop us from doing things. And therefore a person has a legitimate excuse when it comes to actions to be able to turn around and to be able to say, when he has to give judgment, I wanted, but I didn't manage it. I failed. I couldn't do the action. There were too many surrounding environmental, emotional problems that stopped me doing the action. Says the Chidah, that's all true. Environmental and emotional problems can stop a person doing an action. But they can't stop Rotzen, says the Chidah. Ein dover ha'eimed lifnei ha'rotzen. There's nothing that can stop a Rotzen. Rotzen is an internal desire. There's nothing to stop that. stop. It can stop the desire achieving the action in its entirety, but it can't stop the rotzen. Avraham Avinu proved that. The hardest thing possible for a person to do. And we all know the problems. The fact that he was arguing against the Avodah Zarah of killing one's children, and the fact that that he was talking about the Ribbono Shel Olam being a Baal Chesed and a Rachamim, and then he has to go and do something which makes him a laughing stock in the eyes of the entire world. And in addition, he has to kill the son that's born to him after 100 years and the only one that he has, as far as he's concerned. But he doesn't do it in the end. And he doesn't have to do it in the end. And it's considered that he did it. Why? Because at least he wanted to. He wanted to. And once you have the rutz, and the Ribbono Shel Olam says, that's it, I don't need any more of that. You have to want to want. And that is a legitimate claim against a person. You can bring 50,000 excuses as to why at the end of the day I didn't do it, and those excuses can be acceptable, and they may be accepted. You have no excuse not to have the desire to want to do. And that's the theme that's going on here. That's the connections that are going on here between the three parshas. Rabbi Yisai, nobody expects anybody in this place to be perfect. If you would be perfect, you wouldn't be here. Here meaning the following. You wouldn't be on this world, because malochim don't exist on this world, other than when they appear in the form of Arab peasants, and therefore don't start up with the Arab builders around here, because you never know who they are. But generally speaking, malochim don't appear here. We're not malochim. Nobody is perfect. If we would be angels, we wouldn't be here, we'd be up there, and we don't want to be up there, we want to be down here. So nobody's expecting anybody to be perfect. Nobody's expecting everybody to do exactly what they're meant to do. But there has to be a desire to want to achieve something. A desire to want to get somewhere at the end of the day. And how do you know whether a person has the desire and the rotzen to want to get somewhere? What's the measuring rod? What's the vehicle, what's the keli that a person can use? Klape himself. Do I want to want? How do I know if I want to want? The answer is, if something happens, there has to be some practical manifestation of it. In the minimum of the minimum, but there has to be something. If there's nothing, that's inexcusable, because that means there's already no desire to want, which means that you've kept yourself out of the human race. That is a timer. That is a tzviah. In other words, to come and to say, okay, we understand, none of us are perfect. But there has to be a desire to want. I have to have an objective that I want. And I have to have a rotzen to achieve that objective. And I'll prove to you that I have a rotzen to achieve that objective, because that objective is over here and I'm going to hit here. But I'm going to hit here. I have a desire to be able to sit and learn three story. I have a rotzen to learn, but it's not, I can't. For whatever reason it may be. Right? And we're not going into the details of whether the reason is legitimate, the reason is not legitimate. It's not legitimate, you know that. But that's besides the point. That's besides the point. But assuming that it is, fine. You'll give me the list of manias, you give the list of ikuvim, you say what it is, the emotional problems that you have, the psychological problems that you have, the environmental problems that you have, and various other things that you lost, and who knows what, all sorts of things that you can't learn today. Fine. But there has to be the minimum. So come, the 10 minutes. You open the sefer for 10 minutes in the Bais HaMidrash. You can't learn, but at least you came to davening with a minyan. There's a rotzen to be a rotzen, fine. But if there's not that, if there's no rotzen to be a rotzen, then it's a non-starter. Everybody say, let's not fool ourselves. Shlomo Melech already said. And Shlomo Melech put it very, very bluntly, but I won't put it that bluntly. But Shlomo Melech basically said, kid, you can enjoy yourself. Smach bocha b'yeldezecha. Have the time of your life, but just know one thing. There will come a point in time when you have to give judgment. And giving judgment doesn't mean you're going to have to appear before the Beis Din Shomayla, because you don't stand a chance when that happens. Forget it. But you're going to have to give din and judgment means you're going to have to move on in life. You're going to have to do things in life, whether it's a job, whether it's marriage, whatever it is. Life, Emirat Hashem, doesn't chas v'shalom le'aleinu stop at an early age. And it's getting longer as time goes by. Right? Longevity is becoming a fact of life today. There comes a point when you're going to have to give judgment. There's a point when you're going to have to function in life, when you're going to have responsibilities. Don't think that all of a sudden one morning we get up and everything changes and we become different people. Now everything's going to start. No. Whatever the problems are now, if you don't solve them now, and solving them doesn't mean spending till 4 in the morning in Rabbi Lepkin's office. That's the cherry on the cake. That's very nice, because he's a nice guy and he gives you the time of day, which I don't. Very nice. He's a great guy. But that's not it. It only comes from working on oneself. By realizing that life is a challenge. And that challenges exist, and they will always exist, and it won't help in the slightest. And if I don't change, then nothing's going to change. The same thing I'm doing in yeshiva, I'll be doing in a job setting. The same thing I'm doing in yeshiva, I'll be doing in a marriage setting. The same thing I'll be doing in yeshiva, I'll be doing in the nursing home when I get there. The same thing. Shalom Shadron, I once heard from him, I was sitting with him once when he was on a visit in Gateshead. He was sitting there and he told us the following story. He said he had a neighbor who was a childhood friend of his. He was a child, he went to cheder with him. He says he went to cheder, he grew up with him, he went to cheder with him. He says the guy, when he was a kid of 5 years old, he says, had an anger control problem. Slightest thing, he used to go mishuga. He says, then he knew him, he says, when he was a yeshiva bacher. Slightest thing, and he'd go mishuga. He says, then he got married. Wife did the slightest thing, he went mishuga. He says, I was there, what he said to us, I was there by the gesisa. He says, I was there when this man was dying. Because I was part of the minion that was there to say vidu with him. And the guy starts off, he says, Oshamnu, Bogadnu, and all of a sudden there's four kids outside, he says, playing football. And one of the kids kicked the ball, and the ball hit the wall of the house. He says, and the guy's lying on his deathbed in the middle of saying vidu, and he says, Oshamnu, Bogadnu, get those kids to stop playing! Why? Because there's a Yiddish expression. When you're 3, you act that way when you're 30. And when you're 7, you act that way when you're 70. And when you're 9, you act that way when you're 90. If you don't get rid of it, if you don't work on it, it stays. Nothing will change. Nobody here is trying to run an institution because it has to have laws and because it has to have parameters, and that's not the nature of the people who run this place. They by nature are mavericks, they by nature are non-conformists, otherwise this place wouldn't exist, and they're the furthest away from the concept of discipline than can be imagined by anybody sitting here. But mitzad sheni, they do know one thing. Because imein chachma yesh zikna, even though we may not be the wisest of people around, but we've been around longer than you guys. Simply a metzias. We have lived, Baruch Hashem, longer than you guys. And the metzias is that if a person doesn't manage to do something with himself when he's 17, 18, 19, it's over. It will never happen. And a person has to walk around the whole time saying to himself, I need to understand that at least I have to have a rotzen to have a rotzen. And if you have a rotzen to have a rotzen, then the Ribbono Shel'Olam sends you down a shefa and he sends you down a siyata d'shmaya. Be realistic. Look around this base of Midrash. Look around at guys you knew from, plenty of you here knew guys from previous years, right? And look at what they managed to do with themselves. And there are guys sitting here, look what they managed to do with themselves. I'm not saying they got anywhere yet, right? And God help us all if that's going to be role models. But at the end of the day, right? At the end of the day, turn around, William. Where are they now? That only comes if you work at it. It won't come out of the air. It won't come from me shouting and being cynical. It won't come from Rabbi Lapian being a nice guy. It won't come from Rabbi Strizar putting his arm around your shoulder. It won't come. It'll only come from yourselves. And if we manage to get ourselves together and start doing, even in a minimum way, but start doing, then the Rebbeinu Shalom will give us the Siyata Dishmaya and we'll be Matzliach.